Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Royal Blue Podcast in association with Sport Pacer, where the first time in over a month we can reflect on a victory. It's me, Phil Kirkbride, and today joined by Chris Beasley, Tony Scott and Gav Buckland as we look back on Saturday's 3-0 win over Fulham, plus looking ahead to tomorrow night's Carabao Cup game with Southampton and everything in between. Hello, chaps. Very much welcome back. And we've all got smiles on our faces. Gav, talk in an uplifting manner, please, about the excellent second half performance.
Yeah, I think it was uplifting because the first half was dire. I thought that second half was a big half for Silva in terms of being a manager at Everton, to be honest with you, given the unrest of the last few weeks and specifically at half-time on Saturday after a very poor first half. So it was a big half for them. I wouldn't like to be in the dressing room at half-time. And we came out, obviously, with so much more energy and desire, I think, in the second half, and showing that there was a clear gap between us and Fulham. And at the end, I think he alluded to this too, we were playing like you would expect the Marco Silva team to play, which we did in the opening home game to some degree. But for 45 minutes on Saturday, we did, and it's getting that over 90 minutes now. But so that's my uplifting assessment.
So Marco seems to do his best work at half-time. He did it against Wolves on the opening day, Bournemouth a couple of weeks later, and then again on Saturday.
Which he'd do just before the game would be nice, wouldn't it? Do you know what the pleasing aspect for me that you probably don't associate Marco Silva with was the last two games Everton have played, Arsenal away, and obviously Fulham on Saturday, the defence. I was told a look of criticism under Marco Silva, his defence is normally wide open, set pieces, zonal marking, etc. But I thought he coped quite well. He did against Arsenal. Nullified them to obviously an outstanding goal and an offside goal, and then on Saturday, apart from that obviously chance that Sessegnon hits the bar, but can't really think of anything that Fulham created. That's the top of my head, and that's provided this is Mitrovic here, who's currently top scorer in the Premier League, to nullify him to nothing. I thought the defence done quite well, so that pleased me more than anything on Saturday with the defence.
I think the stat, Gav, you might be able to back me up or knock me down on this one. I believe that Saturday was the first time in 18 Premier League matches Marco Silva has managed a clean sheet.
Yeah, I believe so. It was our first one since Huddersfield in April, wasn't it, I think? So
first time since Huddersfield in April that Tosin scored.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'd fully support what Tony's saying there. That was sort of like gone a little bit under the radar, wasn't it? The defence over the last couple of days. You know, Michael Keane's obviously getting some plaudits. So, yeah.
Bees, we've a strong second half, won 3-0 at home, clean sheet. And to add all of that up to, you know, we did it with Richarlison just being okay. You know, we've relied on him heavily, but on Saturday we didn't really need him.
It's nice to see the other players come to the fore. We've mentioned Tosin. I mean, he was struggling desperately for that first goal. He's a player who obviously thrives on goals like all centre-forwards, but particularly so in that he's not the kind of player who would bring you a lot into the game if he's not scoring goals. And I think the manager has more or less alluded to that himself. So it was nice to see him get off the mark, and hopefully that means he's up and running now, and a few more will follow again. Lovely way that Bernard brought in Sigurdsson for his second goal as well, coming off the bench again. He's got a lot of promise about him. And the way Gilfie stepped up after missing the penalty, he's come in for a lot of flack recently just because I think expectations are so high for him. He's such a talented player. People expect him more. And, you know, he could have gone into a shell after missing that penalty. But, you know, fair play to him. He pulled two great goals out in the end.
I noticed you've gone for Bernard, not Bernard. Have we got it wrong?
I'm just going with that one. That sounds more American, Bernard.
because it's, you know, everybody's going into the really positive ahead of tomorrow night's game against Southampton. Another question on the Fulham game: who was the best player for Everton?
For Everton on Saturday, yeah. I think you'll say Sigurdsson, haven't you?
I don't know, have you?
In terms of affecting the... If you're saying affecting the game, as I was talking about, and we won 3-0, he scored two. He was our, in terms of affecting games, our best player on Saturday. He did what you wanted from Sigurdsson when you bought him for 40-odd million. Is affect the game, did it's two goals. We've got four goals in eight games this season now, something like that.
Yeah, four goals, three in the league, one in the
So I put him down with a heart he mentioned for Michael Keane, who talked about Tony was saying before, who's had possibly two best games for Everton the last two weeks.
Absolutely, Tony. I think you were, by that sound, that inward take of breath, you disagree with Gav that Sigurdsson was Everton's best player?
I thought Sigurdsson, up until the penalty miss, couldn't get in the game. I know what you're saying that he affected the game, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
You can do nothing for 90 minutes and score one in the top corner, not affect the game. Do you know what I'm trying to say is that man of the match for me is playing well for numerous amounts of minutes that are worthy of Everton winning the game. For me, I thought Jesse Garner guy was the best player on the pitch by a long way. I know Michael Keane played well on Zoom and Luka Dina, but for me, Jesse Garner guy was doing the job of two midfielders. And I think that's how well he played. He was good on the ball, his tackling, his pressing, everything just set the tone for Everton. I know Everton were poor in the first half, but he was probably the better player of that first half. Second half, he was just absolutely everywhere, winning tackles. Fulham couldn't get near him. And to do that job of two midfields has said a lot. I thought he was the best player on the pitch.
I was walking back to the car at Stanley Park and I was saying almost exactly the same as you. I thought he was terrific. Possibly that second half was the best he's ever produced for Everton. But I'm also going, why can't he do that every week? Because he's good enough. He showed that he's good enough to do. And when I say that, I mean that every week. Yes, we all know he's good defensively, superb at tackling. But it's what he did with the ball at times on Saturday that I found most impressive.
I think when you're playing against a top six team, I think it's going to be difficult for him to do the two jobs that he's expecting to do. Oh, he needs, I think he needs a proper unit next to him, a box-to-box midfielder, along a good ball player. I know it's very hard, so all the assets have just made in a proper midfielder. But if Everton can get that alongside him, I think that will take his game to another level where he can do that against the top six teams. But the team below Everton, he can do that most weeks, but the likes of Arsenal and City, he's going to struggle to do that job what he did on Sunday. Fulham, they're not the best, are they? Don't get me wrong. They're a decent team.
Sean Michael Seri in there. We talked about him on Friday being the danger man. I don't think he did a great deal.
No, I just think if you're looking for the top end where Everton want to beat, they want to be beating top six teams, don't they? You're going to need more than what a Jesse guy is going to be doing, obviously, every week in the bottom half teams.
Bees, any raise on Sigurdsson and Guy? Anybody else that deserves mention as Everton's standout player?
I just think it was important, like we said, that first clean sheet of the season. We've mentioned Michael Keane, obviously come back from that injury earlier than expected. And I mean, he's shown a lot of bravery there. Obviously, he's wearing the head guard or whatever we call it at the moment, or the sort of I don't know,
elaborate
bandages. I don't know what it is exactly, but he's been great. And there were a few moments as well. It's important for Jordan Pickford. I think there's that one moment where he swooped out and took that low take as well at the striker's feet. So yeah, it's a collective effort. But I think it's weird, isn't it? Because it's one of those fixtures in the flip side of Arsenal. It's one that Everton haven't won for such a long time. Whereas Fulham, isn't it the longest winning streak in the top flight. I mean, it is expected, but I don't know if that makes it easier or harder every time Fulham come around.
I wrote about it on Saturday. What did you make of Silva's reaction? Were you expecting him to give more? Because it was, everybody can say in public and play it down, but it was a big win. There was no undue pressure on Marco, but it was a big win, wasn't it? Did you expect him to outwardly show a bit more emotion? He was very kind of reserved about it afterwards.
Is he that manager who gives an outward display of emotion?
He did against Wolves on the opening day.
Yeah.
I thought he was more passionate on the line than what he has been.
That was his first game in charge, wasn't it? I think he will give a reaction on the basis that we played one bad half and one good half. And as you say, Toe, it's like he'd be looking at his own performance and say, well, actually, he'd be asking the same question exactly what you said there. He says, why can't we put two halves together at the same time? So he'd be looking at his own performance thinking, actually, maybe I got that wrong myself. So I think his reaction would reflect our performance over 90 minutes, not 45 minutes, and that was probably playing it down would be about right.
Just pick up on that two-half sting, Toe. I'm just thinking off the top of my head, how many times this season have we played well in the opening 45? Southampton at home, maybe?
Arsenal away.
Yeah.
Arsenal away comes to me.
We tend to have been relatively slow. I know we scored at Wolves, but you know, I think my reflections of the first 45 were we were all right.
Don't forget, it's a work in progress as well. Isn't it? It's quite difficult for a new manager with new players to get his methods across straight from the off over 90 minutes.
He's only got 15 minutes at half time, so I'm thinking he's got all the build to the week. I'm not having a go. I'm saying the players. Why can the players get it in 15? Do you think maybe it's softly in the week and then
it probably is. And don't forget, Phil, once players leave Finch Farm on a Friday afternoon or Thursday afternoon, it's out their heads and they know the basis of how they're going to be playing, how they're going to be setting up. But what Silva tells them to play, like, and who's a man mark and etc., kind of, they'll be going out into their hotels, playing computer games on their mobile phones. Sometimes that'll go out their heads. Whereas in that 15 minutes before the game, though, Silva should be getting into their heads. Listen, what I've told you all week, you should be carrying out.
But do you think that actually having experienced it for 45 minutes and then Marco going, no, you should have been doing this, you should have been on it, like, oh, right, okay, the penny drops it.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah. I think you've also got substitutes to play in there, haven't you? Yeah.
And the threat of substitutes where he hasn't got that at the start of the game, he can basically say to any player in half time, I've got five subs there to pick from. Any of you aren't doing your job, you're being replaced.
So just think aloud there. Substitutes on Saturday. Tosin scored.
Yeah, Bernard.
Bernard laid on the
assist. Schneidlin.
Yeah.
Came on
In terms of affecting the game, that was the difference. Mm. If they're not on the pitch, maybe we don't score two goals. Mm. We're having a different conversation. I think, in a strange way, the sort of stamina thing is a bit counterintuitive to what you would expect Silva's team to be like. You'd expect them to have a strong first half and then tail off in the second half, wouldn't you? There's, you know, if you're playing with high intensity, that, like, sometimes, like, near the end of the game, you're struggling. It's sort of, I don't know whether they're playing too reserved in the first half.
Marco had said at half time that he told the players, amongst other things, and I'm sure he turned the air a bit blue.
Oh, I bet he did.
But he told them to be more aggressive. So maybe they hadn't been put enough energy and work in. And maybe, you know, maybe he's saying to them, you are fit enough and you're going to have to be fit enough to do it for 90.
Do you reckon it involves the atmosphere? The nervousness from the crowd?
I don't sense it as much at the minute. No. I think the onus is more on the players again.
Now, I think what some of the fans are waiting for is something to go wrong. So they go, oh. I'm not having a go at Everton fans, far from it. What I'm trying to say is that maybe the first 10 minutes dictates how the players are going to play and the relationship with the supporters. If you saw a bit of fight and a tackle early doors, which you may have seen in the second half, a bit of pressing, next minute the crowd responds, and next minute Everton on the front foot. Yeah. But in the first 10 or 15 minutes of the first half, Fulham had a lot of possession, didn't he, in early doors?
Last 15 minutes, they were the better team. They had two chances, didn't they? As you say, they had the one hit the bar and the one that Sheila put over the bar, and they should have gone on target. In the second half, they didn't create anything.
They start keeping the ball, it just sends that nervousness within the crowd.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think it's a combination of factors. But I would have expected the Silva team haven't just become manager to tail off in the second half. And, you know,
I don't know if you'd agree, Chris, but during that period in the first half when the intensity of our game after 10 minutes petered out and Fulham had the better of it, I was sitting there thinking, familiar kind of confidence issues might be creeping back in again if you've seen it at times this season. But was the reaction on Saturday in the second half, does that give you encouragement that actually there's maybe a little bit more character in this team than perhaps in previous seasons where we may have folded in such situations? Or
We've got to remember there's been so much change, haven't we, and personnel and the managers, obviously since Mr. Moshiri took over, started off with Martinez at the back end of his reign, and then you've had the ideas of Ronald Koeman, virtually rebuilt that team within a year, and then he's been taken out of it. Sam Allardyce has come in there, and now Marco Silva. So we've had so many different managers at the club with different philosophies and different kind of players that they've brought in. He's just trying to sort of meld all those styles together, and like you say, the characters to come to the fore. I mean, that has been a criticism in recent years. It's that mental strength and toughen it out. So it's like last weekend, places like Arsenal, where they have struggled, they still haven't got that monkey off their back. So possibly, I guess only time will tell in the months ahead when it's sterner tests than Fulham at home.
Well, you've got to remember, Phil, as well, this is a young Everton team. a very young Everton team compared to the ones we've seen in the past. It's, I think we had, obviously we got the youngest captain. I think it was the youngest Everton team for a while as well.
99, it was youngest Premier League this team this season, wasn't it, at Arsenal?
Yes. Yeah. So we've got to remember, take all them things into consideration, the character and starting games nervously, but setting the tone second half, put all into factor. It's a very young team, and obviously learning from a new manager and new players. It's going to take time.
Yeah. I said tonight at the start of the season, that, and you have to see our current performance in this context. Is I wanted to say, I think Michael Ball said this last week, I said in the pod that I want us to see progress over the season. So when we get to the end of the campaign, we are a far better team than what we were at the start of the campaign. That means sacrificing some poor results as part of that learning
experience. Sacrifice points, would you, Gav?
Yeah, to be better at the end of the season. And I think we're a bit like Liverpool's first season under Rodgers. Where if you have a look, I think they won 3 of the first 14 Premier League games and then lost 2 of their last 16.
And they
were going through the same sort of process at the start of the campaign as what we're going through now. With a new manager who's young, has been brought in to basically fix the errors that have been made by the 3 previous managers. And I think we're like Liverpool 12-13. And they were poor at the start but got far better after Christmas. Once they got more attuned to their manager's sort of footballing beliefs, nearly said philosophy there.
Don't.
I think as long as we do that this season, I'm willing to put up with all these, all these like little pitfalls and weaknesses that we've got at the moment.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Okay, lovely stuff. Moving on. Tomorrow night, Goodison. Southampton are the visitors, Carabao Cup third round. We've not really heard from Michael Silva about the competition. Briefly spoke after the last round. So, what's your sense of how seriously Marco views the League Cup?
Well, I think he senses it as it's not his priority, really. We've seen that in his lineup. He made eight changes in the first game against Rotherham. I feel he'll make about 7 or 8 again tomorrow night. I think he'll do likewise. I think he obviously prioritise for Leicester in the league game on Saturday. So I can see where he's coming from. He needs Everton to be in the mix, top 7. As Gav said, to make us a better team at the end of the season. That's his remit, isn't it? From the manager, from the owner, make sure we're a better team to watch and get as many points as possible. A cup is a bonus. Whether we've got the squad to do that, I'm not sure. Whether we've got the squad to do both, that remains to be seen. But I personally think there's a little bit of a gap there for us now. With Liverpool being knocked out, with Manchester United being knocked out, there's not many teams in there. City, you'd fear, obviously. But over a one-off match, what are City playing at the moment? They're not pulling up trees, are they? But obviously, they could be knocked. You don't know. You want these teams to reach each other. Next minute, Everton find themselves in the quarter-final. Semi-final over 2 legs, I'd fancy it. The way Everton play, I'd fancy anyone over 2 legs. Because I think they're better. I like the way they play away from home, Everton. I think they can score a lot of goals away from home, like they did against Bournemouth, like they did against Wolves. Should have scored an half-full against Arsenal. So I think over 2 legs, Everton will cope better against a really decent team. That's why I go for it. I really would. I think there's a accountability as a go for this trophy. And how good was it beating Marco Silva to even get in the final in his first season? Set the tone massively, wouldn't it? Cup final in February, and next minute, confidence is through the roof.
Chris, sorry, Gav, come back to you in a second. Marco has, the only thing he's really spoke about the competition was after that last round against Rotherham, where he spoke about respecting the competition. Yeah. Now, what does that mean to you in terms of how seriously he's looking at it?
Yeah, well, I think it's horses for courses. To be fair, he probably thought, with it being Rotherham at home, a lower division side, he might actually pick a rather different team for another Premier League team coming to Goodison Park. I guess we'll have a much better idea about this in 24 hours' time when that team sheet comes out against Southampton. I mean, personally, I wouldn't make too many changes at all. I mean, it's Tuesday night. They've got all that time going through to Saturday. So there's plenty of time for them recovery there. A couple of tweaks here and there. But certainly, I think given that, like Tony has just said, Liverpool, Manchester United both out the competition, there is a bit of an opening there. And don't forget, it's not Marco Silva's fault. But if Everton don't win a trophy this season, they'll go into a 25th year without silverware for the first time in the club's history. So trophy's got to be a priority.
Thanks for that, Chris.
Having a great pod.
Just killed the atmosphere. I expected that from Gav. Not you, Chris.
Hang on a minute. Yeah. No, but well, Chris, in many respects, that's a positive thing, isn't it? But listen, I think it's a better time we won a trophy. Let's take it seriously. So that's that's the other side of the coin. I think for me tomorrow, I mean, look at Southampton's priorities. There is the Premier League,
Mark
isn't
Hughes
it?
Mark Hughes already said on record that he would make changes.
Yeah, so, you know, you'll be taking that into account. But I'll expect to see a team maybe a little bit stronger than Rotherham, but not our own full strength team. I think maybe as well as when's the international break, is that the week after
Leicester, isn't it? I think.
So after tomorrow, we've only got one game in the best part of 3 weeks, haven't we? I think. Which may influence thinking. I would expect to see a stronger team, but by no means our strongest. But again, I'm with Tony on this. I think not even getting to the final, if you made semi-finals after Christmas, isn't it? So it's like
feel good factors.
Yeah, if you know going into the new year thinking, well, we've got the semi-finals to look forward to, like in 2016, when we were unlucky against City, weren't we? Because that Duff refereeing decision at the Etihad. I think as long as you get to the semi-finals, which we're capable of doing because of the draw, that does not bump up morale over the Christmas period. I think.
And don't forget, Phil. Even if he does make changes, the changes he's bringing in, they're more than capable. They're probably Dina for Baines, Tosin for Calvert-Lewin. So the decent players, not as if like a couple of years ago where you're obviously bringing kids in. These aren't kids. They're really decent players that we're bringing in.
Good point. We got senior players in the game time. Bernard. Or Bernie. He needs game time. So you may see senior players given 90 minutes who've had limited game time in the last few weeks.
Who do you think deserves a start on Tuesday night, he perhaps hasn't always been in the team?
We've obviously got our teams coming up for the team selector on the Echo website, but what I've gone for is I think, like I said, Tosin's up and running now, so I'd stick him in at centre forward and hopefully he can get another one at least. I'd actually go with both Brazilians. I'd give Walcott a rest and I'd have Richarlison one side and Bernard on the other side.
Okay.
Be bold like that.
Wouldn't rest Richarlison? You think he needs to play?
No, I think he had that suspension, didn't he? He's come back, played a couple of games. I think he could play again. He's a young lad, full of energy. I'd give Morgan Schneidlin a go because I think he needs game time. Same with Leighton Baines. Might even try Mason Holgate at right back and give him a go there, but I certainly think the goalkeeper and the two centre backs with that combination there, I'd actually keep them both in. I don't know what Marco's thinking is, and then whether you go with Martin Stecklenburg again in goal, but as far as I'm concerned, goalkeepers don't need rest, and I'm sure Jordan can play.
What's that thought on cup keepers? I can't really sort of think back to Moyes and what he did as a standard, but certainly Martinez, it was a real shift. It felt like it was a real shift. Yeah. Joel came in, you are my cup keeper for now. And it was, it always felt odd to me.
Yeah, he played vessels, didn't he? He was at Oldham in the FA Cup. He got beat 1-0, Moyes. So he did have a couple of games. I don't like the idea. I think it's a daft idea. It's one of the modern things in football that I hate, like having kids on at the end of the season when you're walking around the pits, you know what I mean? I just to bore it. I don't see the point of it. As to say in it, the goalkeepers don't need rest. So if it's the best for your position, play him.
Yeah. One thing I'd like to see refreshed for tomorrow, I'd give Sigurdsson a rest. And I'd like to see Bernard play in that position.
10?
Yeah. I really would like to see him in that position. You've seen on Saturday what he's all about. Composure in the final third. What we've lacked over the last couple of games.
For years, I'd say.
Exactly, yeah. It's that composure, that willingness to go, hang on, foot on the ball here. Let's see where we're going. I think him as a number 10. And it'll give Sigurdsson a kick up the backside as well, knowing that, hang on, there's someone. Because I think out of all the players that we've got in the team, I think Sigurdsson probably knows he's a shoo-in more times than most over the league campaign. But Bernard plays well tomorrow in a number 10. All of a sudden, well, hang on, your shirt's not guaranteed now. I'd like to see Bernard as a number 10 tomorrow.
Yeah, you spoke before about midfield setup. I mean, there's an argument that to say that Bernard plays really, you know, if that is his position, he plays Sigurdsson as a box-to-box midfielder and plays Schneiderlin as your hold midfielder. Then there's no place for the Trezeguet or Tom Davis. That's one of the options going to be available Silva. I think that'd be really good.
Would you go with Bernard as a number 10?
I think I'd like to see him play there because I think he influences the game a bit more. It's like Sigurdsson to me still influences the game a little bit more from that centre position than that wide.
When was the last time we were as, because you can sense it, and even when we were just speaking about it then, when was the last time there was a player that kind of their potential excited us as much as Bernard? I think everybody just wants to see him start now.
I think because we've seen in the cameos, we've seen him. he's done really well and he excites you. There's not many players. We've had Richarlison. Apart from that, I can't think of many players that get you off your seat. Apart from Rooney, I think you'll have to go back down to it where you go, whoa, whoa, he's going to do something here. He's
going to take maybe.
Mate, in fits and starts, I think Arteta was more of a ball player where he could just keep the ball for fun and keep it going. I think get you off your seat, take two or three players on with ease as if they're not there. Mm. There's not many players we've had that can do that.
I felt that in the very early throws of De La Feu on loan. You know, in that first
four. Then you get a sense of he didn't have the brain. You can sense straight away Bernard's got a footballing brain. Yeah. By sending them two Fulham defenders gone out the ground and then pulling it back, waiting, just literally waiting for Sigurdsson to drive in, bang, have a bit of that. We have never seen that composure in a long while.
That's a fair shout. I mean, established man who's playing for Brazil, played in the World Cup, didn't he, I think?
So, I
get that. I mean, I look back at Ross now when he first, you know, his first season, Martinez's first season. I think the difference between Ross and De La Feu, they were learning their trade. Then with Bernard, is a bit more of a, you know, season campaign and comparison.
Their final ball, De La Feu and Barkley's nowhere near as good as Bernard's.
Get you off your feet, but maybe, as you said, the excitement came from not knowing what they're going to do, I suppose. But especially in Gerrard's way, where Bernard is a bit more of a, he's a bit more experienced and knows what to do. Yeah, I'd be really excited to see him. And I think it was great what he did on Saturday, but it was a great goal by Sigurdsson, by the way, that's the third one. His first touch.
Yes.
It had to be good, didn't it?
The first touch to set it up. That was why you pay £14 million for a player on Saturday.
And I actually even think the first one, from where we sit in the main stand, I thought, it's great he scored. I thought he'd mishit it a little bit.
Well, I said to you today, Phil, I thought, I'm blaming a goalie for that. How's he scored?
Yeah.
From outside the box like that with his left foot, it took a deflection. The goalie was poor.
You watch the replay and it's unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, what I would say about Saturday, just briefly, what we did better than what we did against Huddersfield is we got behind the defence a lot more in the second half.
Yes.
There's two goals come from getting behind the defence, I think.
And the penalty, because Calvert-Lewin's got the legs where Tolson hasn't.
So virtually all our goals came from players by the byline, the three goals, which we didn't do against Huddersfield. So against a tight defence, that's a lesson learned for Marco going forward, I think.
Excellent. Now, so before we wrap up, just one question I wanted to ask, and I was going to ask this question before I'd seen some quotes from Joelen Lescott had dropped in our inbox this morning where he believes the best defender at Everton is still Phil Jagielka. And I was going to ask this question to you boys anyway. So who is Everton's best defender?
Joelen says that about his former central defensive partner, Phil Jagielka. I know what he's saying.
Yeah, somebody asked me the question. They also seen the quotes and said, guess who he's picked? And I obviously guessed he was Jags, which is understandable. Has he got a point or is actually Everton's best defender?
The first thing I'd say about Joelen Lescott, he was a very good player, Joelen, like, you know, sad loss. I know what he's saying. If you say it in pure defensive terms, using your experience to understand how to play centre-half, then I would say probably yes. We've not seen Yari Mina yet.
Okay.
But I think you want a bit more from your centre-half, don't you, in the modern game? Be able to bring the ball out, be a bit more adaptable, which is not necessarily Phil's game. And so I would say, If you were a jury, I would say, what's that one in Scotland? You have not proven. I would say, I think it's not proven. I wouldn't know who our best defender is, to be honest with you.
Bees, Preno, our esteemed sports editor, wrote a piece after the game where he said Michael Keane is effectively making himself undroppable. Yeah. Is he Everton's best defender?
Given the expectation levels on him, he should be up there. What I would say is like echo what Gav said, and I also think that Everton had by far the three best years out of Joelen Lescott in his career. I mean, obviously it all ended up very sour for him and the club in 2009, but I think those three seasons that it was Everton. He went on to win the trophies with City, but I think from a personal point of view, Lescott was at his peak between 06 and 09.
Yeah, exactly. Just a quick point on that. When you touch on there about our lineup for tomorrow in central defence, your best central defender doesn't necessarily form part of the best partnership, does it?
It's the old England 1966 World Cup. He wasn't the best players, but the best 11.
And I think, Brian Bowen's a great centre-half, but actually the best partnership was Charlton and Moore. And I think that's something I think you've got to look at. Our potential best partnerships, what we've seen so far, is Zouma and Keane, what you saw on Saturday. Lescott and Jagielka. Yeah, you had Yobo, didn't he? He was decent, but Yobo wasn't as good in partnership with them two. Mm-hmm. So I think that also needs to be taken account when picking the team.
Go on then, Bees. So who is your best defender?
So certainly, I'd go along with Gav. Hopefully the best is yet to come. Evertonians would hope. There's been this great excitement. I mean, ran all through the summer with Yerry Mina. Where are they going to get him? Manchester United were in the mix. Lyon, then he finally came on the deadline day. I mean, so there's that excitement. Just how good is he going to be when he finally gets out there? So I would go along with Gav. Says it isn't cut and dry. It's not particularly clear at the moment. If you're going off past record, well, Jagielka, he's just such a brave player, just putting his body on the line. He's certainly the proven one. But is it Phil Jagielka of a decade ago when he was playing alongside Julian Lescott? I mean, time catches up with us all. But I'm very encouraged with the way Michael Keane has developed, and we should expect that from Michael Keane. Big money signing last summer. I mean, before he came, he was expected to be the one who'd kick on rather than Harry Maguire, who was also in the market at the time. Keane was seen as the better player. I mean, over the past 12 months, it's not worked out like that, but it'd be great to think that Michael Keane does become a slow burner and a real successor ever. I mean, somebody like Dave Watson, who first came into the club, wasn't an immediate success and then was just amazing for over a decade. So, like Gav had said, it's unproven at the moment, and hopefully the best is yet to come.
So you both got splinters, sat on the fence. I'm going to give an answer. Kurt Zouma.
Right, okay.
Speed, power, quality on the ball. Okay. I think he's currently our best defender. I think Keane's playing very well, and I'm very excited to see what Mina can offer. But as it stands, I think Kurt Zouma's the best defender.
Yeah, fair shout. So Phil knew the answer all along there and give us the pay and go through it. Yeah,
a defender who isn't even owned by Everton Football Club either.
Well, yeah.
Hey, that's a technicality, isn't it? Yeah.
Good stuff, Shash. Well, thank you very much for listening to today's edition of the Royal Blue Podcast. And remember, you can review, rate and subscribe to the show on the iTunes and obviously the Acast app. So all comments, very welcome. So thank you very much for listening to the latest edition of the Royal Blue Podcast in association with Sport Pacer.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.